Ever feel like there's a better way to build? So do we. I'm Matt, and welcome to the Mindful Builder podcast, where we believe in education through storytelling. Join me and my co-host Hamish as we both have a passion for building better, breaking barriers, and sharing our experience within the building industry. We're not pretending to know it all. In fact, we're learning right alongside you. Join us each week as we tackle complex topics like building science and mental well-being, inviting the brightest minds to connect curiosity with expertise. We want this to be a real conversation, encouraging vulnerability through honest discussions. So if you love this podcast and you're ready to join in, learn and build better, please do us a favor and subscribe wherever listening. It's the best way to make sure you never miss an episode, plus it really helps us out. And if you're feeling extra generous, a 5-star rating and a quick review would be amazing. Your support helps us reach new listeners and even better, allows us to book incredible guests for the future episodes. Thank you so much for being part of our community. We truly appreciate you. And now on to this week's episode. So we are recording again at Performance Membranes, who are one of the distributors for our lovely sponsors, ProClimber. So
studio sponsors.
Yeah, the major sponsor.
Major sponsor.
So big thank you to ProClimber for that. It's a pretty good
relationship. If you don't know who ProClimber is, you've been living under a rock and haven't been listening for the past 2 years.
And for the next year, we're about to bombard you with a ton more ProClimber stuff. Educational, of course. But anyway, we have Sven from Maxa Design with us again.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Guten Tag.
We don't know what we're going to talk about here. I just like
No, we do actually. Because when we were chatting before, Sven called me out last week and he's like, what are we going to talk about? And I said, I've got no idea. So we were throwing a few ideas around, and one of the ideas that came up was, why hasn't passive house and high performance been like massively widely adopted throughout Australia?
Yeah, and I've got all the answers.
Yeah. Which is why we've got you on. And I think maybe I guess the whole idea of this topic, and I've no doubt that we're going to go down so many different fucking rabbit holes as we're having this conversation. But Sven, before we start, remind our audience who you are and what you do, and you know, I guess what makes you an expert on why people aren't picking up passive house and high performance homes.
All right,
and
okay,
it's probably got nothing to do with your designs.
Probably nothing. No, for sure. So we, Maxa Design, we specialize in sustainable high performance homes, and so we adopted passive house 10 years ago now, and. And so our small team, there's about 8 of us, almost everything we do now is passive house. A couple are not certified, so technically can't call them passive house. But, yeah, so we've
Following the principles.
I really don't like that term, but, yeah, sure.
The passive house come up with the principles, yeah?
Yeah, sure. So so I think to delve into that topic, why it's not being widely adopted, I think we probably should add a layer of context to that, that it's not yet widely adopted here in Oceania, Australia in particular. It is becoming far more widely adopted around the world. And so we're still in our infancy here, even though it's only, what, 10 years or whatever it's been, or maybe 17 years. Or when was the first one? 2013?
2013,
yeah. Can I jump in on that wide adoption? So Barratt London, the capital division of UK's largest volume home builder, have actually said that they're only going to build passive houses from now on. So they are saying that the initial phase will be about 300 homes, which is part of a larger collaboration, but they're expecting at least 4,000 homes in the next decade just in London itself.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and there's places in Ireland, in Canada, in America. There are lots of places where they are adopting it more wholesale.
Ireland now, did someone tell us Ireland was now only building passive houses too? Or Portugal?
Oh, I think there's some technical detail. Yeah. Not everything, but there are certain housing typologies and things like that, or developers or estates or whatever it is. Yeah, I don't remember the detail, but I remember reading an article about that in Ireland, yeah.
So over the last 10 years, you've seen, I guess, the industry changed quite a bit.
And massively.
You know, you've been, I guess, a champion for sustainable buildings for close to 20 years now.
21.
21 years, yep. Mm-hmm. Well done. Congratulations. How have you seen, I guess, the lay of the land change over the past 10 years?
It's changed dramatically. So I think we're still riding the upside of the wave, like we're still climbing our way out, so to speak. When I started out, you know, we were doing mathematics on advocating for double glazing. So we had to do thermal modelling using natters on a house with single glazing and double glazing and prove that the energy savings had a payback period. You know, so you go back, that was probably 15 years ago, right? So
Did you have to prove that the island bench had a payback period?
Yeah, no, this is a great point, right? So people, I think, in our very, and I'm generalising, of course, consumerist society are very attracted to the shiny things. And so we don't see the value in those items that we don't touch and we don't see every day and work with every day. So passive house is the prime example. It's all hidden. You know, you feel it, but it's not something that you – I mean, okay, there are exceptions. Those people who are technically savvy will come and see my HRV system. Isn't it cool? And people go, oh, look at that. That's well, fancy.
I think that's the problem though, because the people – and again, all respect to the engineers and the scientists and the building science nerds, like I feel like they're such a small portion of our built environment, you know, the people that are contributing to the built environment. – That's probably one of the reasons why we're not having such an impact, because what they find sexy and you know, they get excited about.
Yep.
I'd say more broadly speaking, people don't look at it the same way. They're like, oh, great, that's a box that sits in your cupboard. Whoopee fucking do.
Yeah.
You touched on a word before about feel. So it's really – passive house is all about the emotion. So I think I think one of the biggest reasons why it's not being having widespread uptake is how it's being marketed.
There's a big part to that for sure. So I know when you go to the conferences and you're in the bubble like we all are, that's pretty much all we all talk about, but that message is not reaching out, you know, like the ripples in the pond. It's not getting out.
Is that an association problem? I feel like the association needs to be ahead of the curve on marketing.
Possibly the association, yeah, that's part of their role, isn't it, to advocate and push.
And it's hard because, like, I'm not having a go at them here. I'm actually just saying that they've almost like – I've never understood why they haven't really tackled the cost conversation and actually gone, we're going to own it. And if it says that it's higher, who cares?
Yeah, in fairness, I think they're probably still trying to gather the data because it's still so new here and we're still trying to understand exactly where the additional costs lie. We know what contributes to the cost, but it's very difficult because all of the passive house projects are unique projects. It's not two homes side by side that are identical that we're comparing. So our analysis in our practice were two different projects that we've tried to do that, where we've designed and documented as a high-performance home, and then we've modelled it for passive house and looked at the upgrades required to achieve passive house. And then we've analysed the cost variances between those two with the advice and help of a builder, of course. And so that's led us down the path of understanding what the cost variances of those two projects in those two climates with those designs and those materials and specifications were. But you can't then multiply that out across the market and say, well, it's a 10% uplift on every job.
What I think is missing in that, like, little science experiments there is, like, what's the baseline cost? So what's the co-built cost? So would be really interesting in that scenario is to design it to code, cost that, cost high performance, then cost passive house.
The danger,
that's then going to give you the
– danger with that is people always latch on to the lowest price.
No. I understand that. All I'm saying is – this is really a data gathering kind of exercise as to, because when people ask, oh, well, how much more is it going to cost? And you're like, well.
I'd just say between 5 and 20% off, no reason why. I will also say that there's probably jobs that it will save you money.
Matthew Cullen clients.
But there's also jobs it will save you money. If you have a $100,000 hydronic heating system in your house, tell you what's a lot cheaper, a HRV and two split systems in an airtight building.
Well, I personally think it's a lot bigger than that. It's the design.
Yeah.
Like, so it's building design.
So it's building for – it's designing for performance, like, and actually understanding that they're not bolt-ons.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. We're working on something at the moment. I can't say much about it. It's top secret.
Oh.
But I know.
Is it pissing the sips industry off again, is it?
But it's it's sort of looking at how to get passive house out to the broader market. But do it in an environmentally sensitive way as well. So with early days, you know, we'll all sort of know more about this probably, you know, middle of the year, hopefully, maybe April, May sort of time. But
are you talking about the data? Are you talking about the cost to just build it, or are you taking into account the running costs post and the health?
No, we're talking just construction at the moment, and we can do the theoretical numbers on those things, but
I feel that's easier. Doing the projected operational costs is a lot easier than understanding what, you know, the current market costs are for a project.
Yes.
Because for example, with my house, that I'm with Australia Bank, for the first 5 years of my home, and it could be extended for longer, I get a 0.4% saving on my interest rate, which equates to 26 grand over the first 5 years, and they might extend that. So
man, that's cool.
Like, so you that doesn't get taken into account.
There's your HRV system.
But also 100%, I also think, good point on the HRV system, where rebating things like solar and rebating things like batteries. How about we also start rebating and heat pumps? We rebate mechanical ventilation systems.
Yeah, it'd be cool, wouldn't it?
That would make, like, we've got a huge healthcare issue. We can't find nurses, can't find doctors, putting more burden on the spending on healthcare. And we've got a system that if you build correctly can have a huge effect on that.
Yeah, I mean, as we're sitting here talking about it, like you can't help but get a bit frustrated with
politics,
I guess, how stale the industry has been over the past however many years.
Yeah.
And I guess the biggest frustrating part for me is that we've actually got the answers for it. Now, let's just agree that building a house, regardless if it's code, regardless if it's custom, regardless if it's high performance, regardless if it's passive house, is expensive. It's an expensive exercise to do, and probably not achievable for a large portion of it.
And it's not getting cheaper. Let's just also agree on that.
It'd be lovely to crack the code of it.
Look, and we're personally in that same boat. It's been a dream of mine to build my own home for a long time, and I can't get there financially, and it just got further from me in the last few years.
Yeah,
you know, it's like a dream. Like, okay, well, I'm just going to make sure I can get the kids through their schooling years, and then maybe when they're done, you know, then I can afford to do it. Yep. Maybe. Depending what happens. Yeah.
Yep. And you've got a great job. This is the other thing. It's not like you're, yeah.
Yep.
It's.
I think I'm pretty bloody lucky with the job I got.
I feel it's a bit of a hard reality that the model has to change.
Mm.
And the hard thing is we all sit here saying that we want housing to be lower. I think that's also an issue because we can't compete with the volume builder rates because we've got to cut things out. The thing is, we know what we've got to cut out to get it there, but we don't want to.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting conversation because, look, the volume builder market, from my understanding, I don't work in it, but looking from the outside in, it's very much aligned or very similar to the prefabrication route in that it's a cookie cutter approach. It's rinse and repeat. You do the same thing over and over, and the economy of scale delivers the value. So
there's your answer.
There is also some perhaps more strict management of costs and overheads and labor rates and all these other things that bolt in. But just imagine what if you could buy a passive house in the volume builder market, a certified passive house. I mean,
well, that's what we just spoke about at the start. That's what the biggest builder in the UK are doing.
Mm.
And watch them all follow, because if you're a homeowner and you can go, I can go with builder A, who's going to give me a house, and builder B, who's also a volume builder and can give me a passive house, what fucking idiot's going to choose the standard house? Mm. If they're within 1% of the cost.
Mm. I think what then needs to be marketed then is the cost, the running costs. Like, how much is the house going to cost to live in it?
Yeah, and I think there's a bit of that data out there now, so we could potentially project that and vocalise that to the community.
Again, the data doesn't sell, and this is the problem.
I'm not saying that it's the I'm just saying what you need to tell people, you need to tell it in a way that's digestible and that it's interesting and it's not just numbers on a page.
It's got to be relatable.
It has to be relatable.
Sure. No, I agree.
Which is why talking about the feel before, that's emotion, that's emotive.
Mm.
When you feel something, that's emotive. You've got a connection to it.
Yeah, yeah.
So what's the home you live in now? Is it any watt, airtight, any watt, performing?
You – you would not be able to get a blower door to 50 pascals on my house.
Mm.
No way. I've got actually gaps in my floorboards where I can see the dirt.
Yeah, I had that. Mm. So I've just gone into mine, and it's weird because my brain's now ticking on how can I get to feel it.
Mm.
And I feel this is maybe a missing part because I remember at a passive house conference a few years ago, someone asked, put your hands up if you live in a passive house. And like, no one in the passive house community lived in one.
Yeah.
So my thinking moment is I'd probably sit with my wife and be like, tell me about your experience.
Mm.
Like, what do you actually think about the home and what's changed for you? And then even people that come over, like, how does this feel different to a normal house apart from the aesthetics?
We tried this a little while ago. So we interviewed the client on Zoom and recorded it and posted it on socials for one of our very first passive house projects, the one in the Dandenongs. And the client summed it up beautifully. He said he doesn't want to go anywhere. He goes and visits relatives and stays in their house for a few days. He can't wait to get home again because
he doesn't want to see his relatives.
He's freezing or he's boiling up.
He's with the in-laws.
Or he's sick of their cooking. I don't know, but he didn't say that. He was actually really passionate about it, and it was quite refreshing for me to interview him and ask those questions.
It definitely works.
Yeah.
Oh,
And look, I've never lived in a passive house, but we did a high performance home extension to our own home. You might have known the designer.
I might have, yeah.
Max
Cruel and Eco Design.
Where are they
Max,
from?
Max a Design.
Yeah, thanks.
So I remember coming home, you know, we usually take 3 or 4 weeks off at Christmas time. And I remember distinctly coming into Warrandyte, you know, we've, you know, 3 or 4 weeks of holidays behind us and pulling in, and I said to Luce, you know what? I'm actually really excited to get home.
Yeah.
Because it's so beautiful to be in that house with lots of natural light, and the temperature is pretty stable for a renovated and extended home. Again, not passive house standards, but we've followed, I don't want to say the principles, but we've followed good building practice.
Yes.
And it was just a beautiful place to live in. And it's, I can't put my finger on what it is, but it's just the feeling of being in a nice, well put together home. Mm. That is energy efficient and comfortable, and you're not having those wild temperature swings from one room to the next.
Yeah, what is comfortable? Can we talk about, because we say, oh, we build a comfortable, durable home. What is that?
Well, you want to talk about the mathematics that sits in the pair.
And we don't actually want to talk about that at all because that's the problem.
All right, how are you going to talk to your friends that come over? And I always use this because the women and a lot of the decision makers in a renovation or a build, how do you talk to their wife, like the wives, about not this, like, the build, because they're like, oh, I like the stone and the this is, I can see this with Nicole, that she used it's the tiles, the micro cement, the timber, these things. How do we have the conversation around the elements behind? And this is where the marketing message I think needs to be discovered, is how do you talk to them and how do you get them engaged in a conversation? And that's why I talk about comfort. So what is comfort?
Oh, look, it's, what's that Dutch word? Hygge?
Hygge.
That it's sort of like an inner peace and calm, and I think it's all encompassing when we talk about what it's like to be inside one of these homes, right? So, look, and to be clear, I clearly don't live in one, but have spent plenty of time in them, and I think the calm, the quiet, is really something else that our sensibilities don't recognize immediately.
It's weird.
Yes. Yeah,
first
yeah.
night. Yeah. I was like, don't know if I like this.
Really?
I'm really honest. Like, I was like, so I made two mistakes. The first one, I messaged Cam the next day. My passive house isn't working because it was fucking cold.
Oh.
And I was like, and Cam's like, have you turned the heater on just to heat it up? Because you haven't lived in it yet. And you need to get heat into the house. And I was like,
no, we turn our heaters on for a week before we hand over.
And I'm an idiot because I tell every client to do that and I didn't do it for myself. So that was one checkbox. The comfort's weird. And I was like, it's so still and it's so quiet and it's so controlled, and you don't walk from one part of the bedroom to the living room to upstairs and be like, oh, this area's cold, I'm going to put a jumper on, but now I've got to put the puffer vest on, but now I've got to put a singlet on because I'm too hot.
Mm.
But it's also, it's the noise and it's the inside to outside thing that I've really found different.
Yep.
I've had the privilege of staying at a project that we worked on together up in Kyneton, and Chris's place, so good friends of ours. And Kat actually has summed it up really succinctly because, you know, chitin has big swing temperatures from summer to winter. So it could be minus two, could be 40 plus. And she said, oh, during winter, we forget how cold it is outside because they're walking around inside with shorts and T-shirts and we go to leave the house and we're all in shorts and T-shirts and we open the door and then we have to go back inside and change because we forget what it's like outside.
Mm.
And to your point before about the how quiet they are, like these walls are 300 mil thick or something.
From memory, yeah.
They were they were really thick,
thick
walls just because of the climate in Kyneton.
Mm.
And it could be blowing a gale outside. It could be pissing down with rain, but it could be really quiet and even.
You have no idea when it rains. Mm. That is one thing I've learned. Like I have no idea when it's raining outside.
Yeah, but so you don't have the, I guess the, what am I trying to say? You don't have the signals to go, oh, it's cold outside because you can't hear it.
Mm.
You get to see it, of course, but you don't have the other triggers that it's windy or it's raining. So when you actually do open the door to go outside, you're like, oh, fuck, it's really windy outside and cold.
Mm.
I've got to go and prepare for a 6-degree temperature outside, but it's 23 inside.
Yeah.
But I've rambled on for about 2 minutes then. How do you condense that into 3 seconds to grab someone's attention to convince them to build a passive house?
And you can't use the words comfortable, durable.
And this is I think this is the problem because all three of us, between us, have, let's just say, 25 years of experience in passive house between us, right? Mm-hmm. Over the years of us collectively.
More. Like,
let's just minimum 25, right? And we can't put it into words.
Mm.
And maybe that's the problem.
Yeah. And that's the beauty of the open houses, isn't it? You know, people come in and experience it for a blink.
I feel like they're almost, I shouldn't say expired, they've got to be done differently. Mm. Again, it's the same thing. We come experience a passive house and most of the time now they're during construction, which you get to feel a construction site that feels more comfortable than your own home.
Yeah.
But there's also a lot of insurance issues that come along with bringing someone into an own home.
But there's more and more coming into market too, mate. Like there are rentals out there now, right, that are passive house certified. So
really?
You can go and rent in, stay in one.
There's Airbnbs you can go and stay in.
That's what I'm saying, right? So you can go and experience it. There's hotels and all sorts of stuff now. But I think the other thing too is that, you know, we bang on about it and we all love it and we're passionate about it. You know, and that passion can flow out.
Yep.
No doubt about it. But at the end of the day, someone's got to pull out the money out of their pocket and take that leap.
So this is something that I've got written here because it's a comment that constantly I see on my social media that people are right and be like, they're just they're acting privileged, like living in a passive house, so people can't even afford to buy a house.
Mm.
So all of a sudden we're trying to push the standard even further ahead when people are just getting left behind even more.
Okay, so I've got a comment about that. Regardless of the affordability of homes, people are still going to build homes, right? So let's focus on, well, not focus on, but let's just talk to the people that have the money, that have the means. How do we get the people that are going to build regardless to build a high performance or a passive house? That's the question. I'd love to solve the problem of everybody. It should be equitable and everybody deserves a house.
Good answer to that question, Hamish.
I get that. But how do we convince the people that actually are going to build?
That have the money.
Oh, well, that's easy.
You said you had all the answers, Finn.
I do have all the answers. Okay. Yeah, that's easy. You just send them over to Maxa Design.
you bring the builder along, which is going to be Sanctum Homes or Carlin Construction.
That's right. Yeah. And before they know it, they've just given you the blank checkbook and off you go. Yeah, no.
We make up this 10 homes a year of the – how many of 50,000 need to be built? Like it doesn't
– Yeah. So, it's all about balance, isn't it, at the end of the day, right? Like these clients who can afford to do this stuff probably just need some education because they may not know as much or have read or learnt what we have over the years.
The clients that come to you, though, already know what they want. Let me rephrase that. How many people that come to you don't know what a passive house is?
Now, probably all of them do.
Yep. So this is where the marketing message needs to change. How do we get more people coming to us that don't know about passive house so we have to re-educate them? That's maybe the question that we need to be asking. How do we actually attract the people that don't know passive house?
Yeah, so you've got to get in front of them and so where are they getting their information from? You know, which is it media? Is it TV?
Yeah.
Angela on the Facebook group.
Angela. Angela and Dave.
Okay, yeah, sure. Yeah,
Angela and Dave. That'll make sense when you listen to some podcasts. So here's another question for you, right? So, and I can talk to this because, you know, we do a lot of work together.
So is it a question for you or me?
I'm going to have a bit of preamble and then we can talk about what I'm going to say.
All right. Great. I'll let you answer.
Great. So extension renovation, clients had their heart set on a passive house.
Mm-hmm.
We've done some preliminary, very sort of feasibility study costings on it and have kind of realised that maybe a certified building is probably outside of their means.
Mm-hmm.
How do we keep the shine on the project if they've had their heart set on a plaque on the wall, and how do we then demonstrate to them that if we maybe fall a little bit short of the metrics that the PHI tells mm-hmm. us needs to happen,
mm-hmm.
how do we keep the energy and the shine in the project if we're not going to hit that?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think ultimately the comfort
yep.
is a major factor. And if you are hitting 31 kilowatt hours instead of 29, the comfort levels,
negligible.
You probably won't know the difference, right? You'll notice a slight energy shift in, you know, energy consumption in keeping the temperature where you want it to. I think you would still advocate that you use a certifier to check that everything has been modelled properly, because it That's may well be point. that 31 is more realistically 40 or 45.
So,
and so the difference between that and hitting the metric is suddenly 50%.
I want you to expand on a little bit, because obviously we're getting some data mm. originally from the PHPP
mm-hmm.
and you're now saying we need to bring a certifier in to review that data.
That's right.
To validate it, yep.
So certification is all about QA, right? And I've spoken about this in the past, that it has its flaws, right? And there are ways to make certification better, and we've just proven that recently on two projects. Anyway, I can talk about that in a minute. So you bring a certifier in, they're not just checking that the builder has done what he needs to do, right?
That's almost the easiest part, isn't it?
Well, it's sort of. As long as the builder has done everything properly and documented yeah. it sufficiently. We've had a number of projects, and I've heard stories where they've fallen over because the builder didn't execute properly, even though
really?
Everything was done. Yeah. So, yeah, we want to make sure that what we've done has been done thoroughly and accurately. Like, that's what I love about certification. I love having my work checked, you know, and it's not by my hand personally. We've got a team of people that have been doing this for a long time. They all know what they're doing, right? They can execute passive house blindfolded, but we're human. We make mistakes.
Yep.
So having a certifier on board is going to bring the value to the client in that, well, they're holding us to account now. We are doing what we said we would do. We are delivering what we promised. Now, the builder is going to have the same value add, because they're going to have someone checking what they've done. The PH designer who's done the PHPP is getting validated and checked as well, right? Now, what we advocate, and we send our clients this information early in the process, is that then during the building process, while the builder is making his best or her best efforts to execute, someone should be going and having conversations and viewing what's happening on site.
And just to clarify, we're still talking about a project that's not seeking certification.
Yeah, because imagine that you've built that fabric and you've missed a thermal bridge, right? Let's just say one thermal bridge. And in 5 years' time, there's a bit of mould on that plasterboard, you know. And I'm not saying that a thermal bridge equals mould, right? I'm exaggerating.
Yeah, well, right? I mean, it could.
It could, but it doesn't necessarily
yep.
always.
Yep.
So, you know, client's going to look at that and go, shit, I wish I had someone cross-check this.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
And, yeah, okay, you've got a HRV in there and that's doing the heavy lifting and you've got some safeguards in place, and it's highly unlikely, but the risk is greater. So let's take risk away. It's a whole reason our building codes have inspections in them, you know, albeit
Choose when they want the inspection to make
it. Worthless and very low value, but they're there, right, and they exist, and they will, I think, in the future grow, and there'll be more inspections on buildings as things
Which
progress
we
with new
would
codes.
All agree is a good thing.
Yep. Oh, we can't have enough, right? Because our codes are antiquated. They're based on systems and processes from 50 years ago, 100 years ago. It's keep adding another layer.
It's based on suppliers and what products they want to protect as well, so they don't actually have to upgrade their products to –
Potentially.
Look at the insulation code. Like, you can't have external insulation. You need a performance solution.
I'll never forget speaking at a home show years ago. I have to be 15 years ago now. You know, one of the Herald Sun ones or whatever it was at Jeff Shedd. And there was a guy in the audience, great crowd, talking about passive solar design, and he's straight away barged in at Q&A time, very vocal, said, why have the codes changed and why is sizolation no longer recognised as an insulation in our floors or whatever it was at the time? Yeah. I don't know what changed. And he pulled out a sample out of his bag. I represent so-and-so company. It was one of those. And he clearly had an axe to grind, right?
But he took you to one of the
piano accordion type. And his business had literally gone backwards because the code changed on him.
Well, he had a shit product is really the answer.
Well, ultimately, yeah, those products we all would agree are probably not superior. But nevertheless, what to your point about materials and suppliers and companies, you know, pushing our codes, I think there is some truth, but perhaps it's not just that.
So certification. What does it cost? Because our building's so expensive, I don't know if I can afford to build. Now I want to certify a building.
I don't like the question.
And sorry, I'm going to add a little bit more to that too. What you've just talked about before with even having the certifier involved, even if it's not being certified, because you brought about them, you talked about them checking the builder too. Mm. Like you're almost there.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yes.
So look, okay, yes, there is a financial outlay for sure. On a residential project, it could be anywhere from, say, $5,000 or $6,000 to $10,000 or $15,000, yeah, right? But I don't think we should be looking at it, as we've just talked about. It's not cost, it's value.
Yes.
Right? What are we adding in and what are we getting back?
I agree, but I think this is the problem. People try to avoid the conversation where you've clearly explained it in a real positive way. Well, people are like, oh, well, it's just part of it. It's like, well, it's not asking or answering the client's question that want to know how much it costs because, yeah, just own the fact that it's, say, let's just use $10,000. That's fine. Mm. Just own it. I don't see the problem with it because it's you're spending your money on so many points, and if most clients are spending $1 million, $1.5 for a custom build, what's that as a percentage?
And realistically, if you break it down and you go, okay, so dear client, the cost of your home is $1.23 million to build that house. Oh, sorry, it's $1.24. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah,
you know, 10 grand, when you're talking about that money, it's not a substantial shift. Yeah, but what they're getting in return is that they are holding their entire team to account to deliver what they paid for at the start and what they asked for. I think it's a massive value add. So consider it an insurance policy.
So Hamish, question for you. What if we just did certification and didn't tell the client, put it in our costings, we'll pay for it, and we assume that it's going to be low energy? Like let's not talk passive house certification or component method. Let's actually just, because we know it's going to be low energy, because hold on for a second. Because if we go through the process, every project to me should be modeled in PHBP. So you've already paid for that initial part. So you already know roughly where we're going to sit. Then where I think we should all projects is it at least should be then sent out to a certifier to do their first initial review. That there's a cost there. So most of the time you've already paid for that. You at least have guaranteed that what has been designed can work. Now it's up to the builder to make sure they're accountable. Hmm. Then we go from there.
Yeah, I think there's some more to it though. Like it's we're not talking about a box of vanilla ice cream here. Like this is Neapolitan now, because you're going to have also some additional costs in your design documentation if it hasn't been done well to start with. So people like us, we do all the details anyway, right? It's all there. But some design teams may not provide that
detail. That's their problem.
Okay, so that's another cost that might come into play.
Let me ask you, can you put a number on the additional work that's required for
the average new architect?
Well, to provide those details. Because what we're talking about insulation, we're talking about thermal bridge, we're talking about potentially chasing it.
That's like saying, well, how much does it cost? How much more does it cost to build a passive house? What's our base?
You've answered my question, and it's probably hard to do. Is it between $2,000 and $5,000 to do those additional details?
In our practice, if we're taking a project to be passive house certified, we'll usually have about a week's worth of drafting on top of our normal time allowances to make sure we've got the thermal bridges documented, all the membranes shown, the insulation's continuous, the windows are documented properly, et cetera.
Okay.
So let's throw some – I'm actually just going to run rough numbers. So let's call that – that's probably about $3,000 of someone's labour. I'm just going to
– Yep.
So then you've got, again, from that, if you're going to have someone like – we'll go externally, someone like Cam that's going to do his – PHPP analysis, mm-hmm. assuming no thermal bridge modeling, you're probably looking at around 6 to 7
in total.
Yeah,
yeah, for preliminary and then a reconstruction.
So
check.
Let's call it. Let's just we'll go in the higher amount. So we're at $10,000 there. Then you're going to go to say Detail Green or HitV Hype.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
What are they going to cost? About 8.
Yeah, 7, 6, 8, 9.
Is that for the full amount from start to finish?
That's a pre and a post. So let's just call it. So
and that includes the plaque.
Yeah. Oh. Is it spelled with passive house or house though? So, all right, we're getting sidetracked. Anyway, we're sitting at eighteen grand here at the moment. Now, Hamish, do you charge any extra for your passive house documentation and back end stuff?
So it's a hard one to say. I'm going to say, broadly speaking, no. If it's a passive house, we're just following the same process that we do normally because we're documenting everything anyway.
Yeah. Okay. So no, I'm going to assume that.
Let's just say.
I'd say $2,000 worth of time to do.
Well, let's say five grand admin. Let's just say that. Sure. Five grand admin.
Okay, so I'm going to add these up. So that is $23,000 that I would say, at worst case, let's be assuming you're not chasing passive house certification, is what it's going to cost you. You're probably going to do it for a little bit less than that, I would say.
Is that to get certified?
That's to get certified.
Yep.
So if we just put a blanket rule and say, hey, certification's 25, up it and be super big. Contingent on the lower your risk on the number and say it's $25,000. Like if you look at it from, I don't know, a 1.5 mil bill cost, what's that as a percentage?
Oh, you're talking
about 0.5?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just guessed that. So
no, it's probably about right.
But to my point before, you know, okay, there's an uplift in professional fees. No problems with that.
Someone's got to be paid to do it. So
yeah,
that's
right. The work has to be done. But with the right design team and the right consultants, you'll get that money back with the strike of a pen. Suddenly your triple glazing only needs to be double glazing because your design team put the windows in the right place. Yep.
So this is where I was actually about
this
to get
is
back.
Where coming
this
down, this is designing for performance comes
this,
into it.
This is the worst case. Now, if you were to introduce you guys working together, that $25,000 is probably more like 15 to 18.
Oh, well, if we're working together, it's probably more like 35. No, I'm joking.
I was wondering how you got your new BYD Shark.
No, I reckon those numbers are pretty
right.
good.
Like, just, right.
They wouldn't change a lot.
Yeah, no, I know. But let's just own the fact that that's okay because I look at it and go, and from my perspective with my own house, I just cut two pieces of joinery out that I know I can do in the future.
Mm-hmm.
And in hindsight, I'm like, I actually didn't need those pieces of joinery.
Yeah.
Or it's the, I don't know, the change of a piece of stone or a, I don't know, there's decisions you can make along the way. And I think the other thing that we don't talk about passive house that we can never capture is there's a high level of collaboration very, very early on. And generally you're bringing in an engineer that's like we work with Oranic a fair bit who are very switched on to using more timber.
Mm.
None of this, when you go through this process, takes into account the money we will save you on your construction buildability and the way the project gets put together. Mm. And as you said, we will look at going, you'll instead of you just assuming we put the windows wherever and now you need triple glaze, well, you might get away with double glaze, which is what we've got on our Wellington Street project.
Mm.
So there's a $15,000 saving, which automatically
cuts that down.
That's $10,000 now it's costing.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think, okay, I'm just going to call it the elephant in the room here. All right, wait, $25,000 is still a lot of money.
Yeah.
$1.5 million is still a lot of money.
Yes.
And a lot of people can't come at that.
Okay. I just said before, though, that if you go with Australia Bank and you get a 0.4% on your interest rate and there's your $26,000
fine,
and you just paid for it.
Fine. But we're still talking about large chunks of money that people still need to come up with.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're already immediately out of the gate making concessions for joinery or size or views to the east or west or whatever, like they're potentially already getting something that maybe is not what they imagine in their home. So they might see that number and go, oh, well, you know what? Take that out because I do want triple glazing because I want to capture that view. So
But that's where the design skill comes in.
Yeah. Look, and I think that the reason I just brought that up then, though, is because it's so much more nuanced than saying, well, this is the reason why people aren't building certified buildings.
Exactly, yeah. And look, we're talking about $23,000 in consultant fees. There's the cost uplift in the building fabric as well, right? And the HRV and whatever else. So,
But what's Alistair saying from Y Projects? And I don't want to steal his analogy about when...
Oh, they're going in and... Where did he go?
The frozen yogurt. So they go that one too. So he's saying I'll go the first one where he's saying if you're gonna go test drive two cars and you go drive the Ferrari and then the little Suzuki Swift, you want the Ferrari, not the Suzuki Swift. Yeah. So why show them the Ferrari at the start?
Yeah.
The other one he uses is the frozen yogurt analogy, where going into it through a design process at the moment with most building designers and architects is like it's going to the frozen yogurt store. You put all your toppings on, you don't know what you're getting as a price.
All right, so you know what? I don't
that's the reality, and it's not fair on you guys. I'm not having a go at architects because it's so hard. I can't imagine how to design putting down a piece of paper and start sketching me like, what's this going to cost?
I don't usually poke the designers and architects. I usually leave that to my friend Matt.
I'm defending him for it.
So I actually think that designers, architects, interior designers have a responsibility to their client to not show them the Ferrari. If they know that they can't afford it, don't fucking show them.
Yeah, okay.
But that's also,
however,
that's what the client asked for them. That was their brief, and it's on the architect or building designer to design their what they've asked for. It's there's no difference of a client.
I'm not putting the blame on.
No.
Design.
So I can defend architects here, see?
The flip side is, it comes back to what we were talking about earlier, that we want to get this out to the market. We want to spread the word. So are we not obliged to educate clients who don't know better?
But if educate...
No. I agree with you, but don't show them something they can't...
Afford. How do we know they can't afford it?
My idea is the best way to do it is to get early engagement with the builder.
Oh, yeah, but why?
I think first stage is, I reckon almost, and you'd scare people off. The ultimate would be like, go to your bank and tell you what you can borrow and show us it.
Yeah.
And we'll design within that limit. But that's not also, because then you've got people who would abuse that too.
It's hard. And look, even as, look, we've recently had a project where we did feasibility and we've come out of the end of it and we've got to a number which is a lot higher.
Mm.
Now, we've done a whole bunch of review on it and we've kind of, we're working through how that happened, because it's actually, hand on heart, it's the first time that it's happened that drastically.
Was it the first price or second price?
Second price. So we did a feasibility costing.
And that was?
Yeah, and then albeit an old way of us doing
it. Yeah, okay.
And now we're kind of over here and the number's a bit higher than what they want to spend. So now we're, it's been a tough couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Did the interior designer go bananas?
No. I think it's a combination of a lot of things.
Everyone added their 5% of change.
So I guess what I'm saying to your comment before about, well, what's the solution? Mm. I want to say get a builder on early.
Mm.
And I think history, or our recent history, has shown that our feasibility does work, within some parameters.
Yep.
But sometimes it can come back with surprises.
Can falter. Yep.
Yeah, it can falter.
There are no guarantees.
So yeah. So I guess what I'm saying before is, I'm not putting all the blame on the design team.
No.
Sometimes it can come down to some of the data that we're putting out as well. And we're absolutely
rubbish in, rubbish out, mate.
We're absolutely doing our best to try and show you guys and the client our best guess is probably the wrong word, our best idea of where the budget's gonna land.
Mm.
Because there's no point us getting all the way over here, putting them in. I'm creating a timeline with my hands here. A few months down the track, and saying, "Well, we want to start in 4 months' time," giving them a number that we've got to do 4 months worth of value management on.
Yep.
That's not our intention as a builder.
Yeah,
because it's a waste of everybody's time.
Yeah, and that's part of the challenge we face. We know historically through all of our projects that the budget and the brief never align. And that's one of the hardest things to navigate for all of us.
Oh, it sucks.
And even when you get to the end, right? So you've got feasibility done, you've had cost analysis done, you've done your design development in good faith, you do more cost analysis then with your builder, and it's tracking okay, but they still need to pull a bit of money out to make it more viable. And then you get to the end of the documentation and the numbers are still different and aren't where you want them to be. And so then you've got to do value management. There's this whole process and it happens almost every time.
Almost 100%.
And we educate our clients on that at the start. We say, this is the trajectory that projects follow historically and we don't like it and we're trying to fix it. And we're trying to work with builders to do so. And most clients will take that on board and say, great, let's work with a builder.
So I want to pick on builders for a second because I feel like there's a lot of education, which is awesome on builders right now. Like you can go anywhere and learn how to run a building business because there was nothing and all of a sudden there's heaps, which is amazing. The problem I have is that so many builders now jumping on this pre-construction process early, which is a good thing, but they don't know how it works. And I feel, and I've seen, and I've lost out jobs because they just throw a number out there with no validation on their number and I lose the project because I've said it's going to be 1.3. The two builders have said, oh, it's 800. Mm. They've done their first round of pricing, it's 1.3. Mm. And so I feel that you've got to, with, when you pick your builder to work with, it's like, what have they, how have they done it before? How accurate have their past experiences? Mm. Talk about a time where it didn't work, like in Hamish's example and go, what happened then? Speak to other clients on how they found it. I think that's something that we probably get overlooked because every builder is offering it right now. Mm. But I don't, I'd say a very small percentage actually understand how and it should feel and look like.
Mm. Yeah, and making it a valuable process.
Don't be a gatekeeper of the information. Like so like everything, it's got to be 100% transparent. Anything you come through, you should feel comfortable to be able to show everyone the piece of paper and go, hey, this is what we found. Whether that's a price, a quote, conversation. Don't gatekeep that information.
So how can we convince more people to build high performance or passive house?
Give them away for free, okay. Like lollipops at the zoo. Yeah,
I've never got a lollipop at the zoo.
No.
Dentist. Dentist. Dentist.
That makes no sense. You go to a dentist, get your teeth cleaned. Well, it actually kind of makes sense because you got to come back again.
Have a lollipop. Have a lollipop.
Yeah. Look, it's a great question and no doubt it is kind of an elitist thing, right? Certified passive house is certainly the premium product in the market.
Custom homes, just generally speaking, are probably something that's arguably elitist.
Mm. Well, from a sustainability perspective, I'd like to think that building, stretching and building a custom home, while it might cost you more up front, is a great investment because ultimately you're going to use one less or two less houses to get to where you want to be and where you're comfortable.
Yep.
So, you know, I'd argue that. So that might be a stretch of the imagination for a lot of people, but sustainability is kind of why I sort of pursued this game and what really made me start chasing passive house. And you can build an unsustainable passive house. There's no two ways about it.
How?
Using petrochemical-based products and unsustainable materials and, you know, wrapping them in plastic. Like it's not the best thing for the environment when you break it down, right? So the ultimate sustainable home is the one that you don't build. So we're all a little bit flawed in that logic in some way, shape or form. But, you know, I'd love to build hemp, straw, rammed earth, mud brick, you know, entire homes. But
like, we can afford that.
Do you know how many times I've tried to do a composting toilet in a house and I've you know, in 20 years I've got one over the line maybe if I'm lucky, you know. Like it's just it's a step too far for a lot of people.
So this is a good conversation because I was at the Sustainability Summit the other day and they were talking about these new words for sustainability like bio something and whatever. And Liam from Hippie Hype kind of made a good point. He's like, can we just stick on sustainability and get that right first before we jump into these new words?
Yeah. Because like, you've seen it, right? You've seen the biophilic this and that, right? Like we love that. It's all great. But at the end of the day, we're just trying to make comfortable, beautiful homes that aren't damaging our environment relentlessly.
Yeah. It's just pushing people further and further because now there's four words they've got to worry about. And so just like, I don't know. I think that
I actually really like that. Just focus on getting that thing right first before you start jumping on the next buzzword.
And it was like I saw the Earth ship on Grand Designs a few weeks ago. Yeah, awesome. It had a beautiful rammed earth wall as a sort of spine wall as a heat bank. You know, do all this thermal mass. It's fantastic.
Oh, that condensation in that front room though, and then, trying to kill me.
And it's an Earth ship, right? Yeah. So they're building this wall out of earth. I'm like, this is great, right? And you know the Earth ship brand and how that works about using waste to build homes, etc. Anyway. And then they membrane the wall with a bitumen membrane, right, to waterproof it because they want to be a retaining wall. Now, no engineers ever let us use rammed earth as a retaining wall.
I don't think they did either.
Anyway, so yeah. So then they go and clad it in EPS foam and put another plastic sheet up to try and protect it so that it doesn't then
I had anxiety on that when I'm like, that ain't working.
Yeah, so I'm thinking that's just not an Earthship anymore, right? Like we take an ideal and we then squash it, extrapolate it, twist it, rotate it, and we come out with something else.
That episode is fine.
Is great.
That was a very interesting episode, actually. Like,
yeah,
the guy, I think, nearly.
I'll be honest with you. I mean, just digressing a little bit. I really liked that.
It was probably my
lovely.
The house was looked beautiful.
Probably my second favorite episode of the year.
Yeah.
Well,
favorite hasn't come out yet.
It will be my second favorite episode of the year.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm allowed to talk about it.
When
now.
Do we get to see our favorite one?
By the time this will be out, it'll be already on TV. I know a date at the moment. I can't say it.
I know it. Can I say it?
No, but it could come on ABC iView any time now.
Oh, really?
And the reason how I'll find out is probably someone will come to me and go, "Hey, your TV, your episode's out."
Yeah,
that's legit how we'll find out. So
yeah. I'm literally watching iView every single day to find out.
But there's been some great episodes in this season of Ground Design, and the good thing about it, there's been a number of passive houses,
yes,
that have been talked about, and they've kind of championed that side of things.
How many episodes has Drew now been on?
5. So the funny thing is, I was chatting with Anthony, the host, and Drew somehow got on the final reveal. I'm going to spoil if you haven't watched it. And I was like, so you had Peter Madison, who was the first host. So if you went on IMDb account, you had Peter Madison, then you had Anthony Burke, and then you'd be Drew Croker. It's like 5 episodes. So I don't know how he's weaseled himself into. And he was all upset because his shirt wasn't ironed, and he's like, "Oh, wow, look, scraggy." He still managed to get his fresh haircut.
I'm gonna give him so much shit when I say.
Anyway, we've got to wrap this up. But Mindful Moment, sponsored by MEGT Australia's apprenticeship experts. We're gonna just throw to Sven. You got an idea or something? A bit of advice to anyone trying to get into the field, or anything wisdom you'd like to pass on?
Oh, I got lots of advice.
If you haven't listened to the
advice for people wanting to get into the field, that's a great one. Door knock. Yeah. So don't send emails. They get deleted. You go.
I was just about to say, like, I think, and it's probably related to our business relationship, you emailed me, and this is on that sort of idea of always that sort of learning mentality, like always wanting to be better. And you know, we're pretty candid with our feedback on, you know, how we would like things to be done and learning from our mistakes. And I think you took that to a next level by contacting us and saying, "Hey, I'd really like to get our team on your building sites."
Yep.
And, you know, testament to your team, they've gone and done their white card. So they're all
Riveting course.
It is a riveting course. That is but so I guess, exciting. You know, but it's for me, it's that investment. Like, yep, you know what, we're serious about this. Yep, the team are going to go and do it. And, we've had a couple of your team out on one of our building sites now, and I think for me that just shows the fact that you're listening to our feedback.
Working, actually, for example, installing windows. Yeah, not just coming on and be like, "Oh, my God, why is that like that?" Like
being actually active on site.
No.
And Rory and also Dan aren't backwards in coming forwards with, like, things that they want to see different on the next one. And I guess the really great thing for us is actually seeing that then play out on the next set of drawings.
Yeah.
And actually seeing your team, I guess, penny drops on, that's what they're talking about.
Yeah.
Because they're actually there doing the thing, so.
Yeah, so that, I mean, I grew up on building sites as a kid, you know, so I kind of have this understanding of the tangible aspect of it. How heavy is a beam to lift and maneuver into place? You know, how hard is it to work with a sheet of iron in the wind and those sorts of things? I've got some context there. But I didn't know if my team had that. Some had some bits of experience. But so I thought getting them onto the site would be a really great way for them to get that feeling, and that they know now when they're working on a set of plans, oh, hang on, I'm not just drawing a line. I'm actually placing a member or a membrane or a fabric or a material. I'm doing something in real terms here. And I know you guys, you know, look at our drawings and throw them in the bin. They don't mean anything, but hopefully that's going to change, right? So, but it was the same reason we came down here to Performance Membranes and we all did the training course together, you know. Just the easiest, simplest thing to do. We did it a couple of years ago now, and everyone walked away just going, "That was fantastic," you know.
Yeah. But the time you spent, the investment, you probably spent, I don't know, $2,000-$3,000 of team time being here, but you would have got that back so quick on the speed of the drawings changing for future projects. When we talk about that $5,000 for your team spend detailing stuff over the 15, 20, 30 projects, you've probably saved how much? Like knowledge is power.
Hope so, yeah, yeah. And I mean, it's just everyone's doing professional development and in trying to improve. That was just one way we thought we could help.
That's honestly like rather than I think architects and designers, engineers going and doing a James Hardy online presentation, do their CPD point, maybe go on site and reach out to any builder and be like, can we come install a window with you guys and understand it? Or when you do it before pre-slab, can we have a look at what you've done to insulate it or a frame or something
that's really interesting, and it's kind of maybe slightly off topic. For Sustainable Build Alliance, we always thought that our target market was builders.
Mm-hmm.
But we get so many designers and architects coming along to our webinars and our events because it's like we just don't have this. Yeah. We don't have that sort of practical – you know, we're often getting sold products or, you know, trying to push an agenda, whereas we're like, no, we just want to give information.
Imagine if there was another movement that could have done that.
Imagine.
That just didn't capitalize. Anyway. Sven, I've been well behaved this episode. Anyway, Sven, thank you for coming on again. How do we get on to you? Anyone that wants to reach out?
Yeah, thanks for having me. So maxadesign.com.au, socials, Instagram, Facebook.
Interwebs.
And,
what's the other one, Hamish?
And if you do get a lead from this, just make sure that you're putting me in front of them.
Okay, sure.
As the only builder.
All new homes in Yarraville by Sanctum Homes.
Yarraville?
Yes.
He doesn't travel that far.
I'm not traveling to Yarraville. Awesome. Thanks, Sven.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.